This week on RSPNV Update, Wilderness Threat takes the axe, bringing a rebalance to wilderness activities. We also take our first peek at the changes to Animate Dead and the fractured staff of the Arbidil. We ask, do they strike the right balance? Then we meet new community manager, Maud Doom. This is RSPNV Update, episode 926, recorded Thursday, March 16th, 2023. On Animate Dead. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week, we have a panel to discuss a number of changes, some of them just released a mere hours ago. Here is our recording time is Thursday. But Tanis, you're here as you are each and every week.
Thank you, Shane.
Also joining us this week is Daxi to talk about, you guys probably know why he's here, combat stuff, crit stick stuff, Animate Dead stuff. Yeah, we'll get to that in course a bit. Welcome back.
Nice, thank you. Good to be back. It's been a minute.
Yeah, we had you on for a couple monthly bits this year, but not the regular show, so I figured it was about time for that. But nonetheless, if you guys are here, you probably, of course, want to hear about the Fractured Staff of Armadillo and Animate Dead changes. We have those for you this week. We also have a rundown of the Wilderness Ninja Strike, and we get a preview of next week's quest, Murder on the Border. And we also met the new RuneScape community manager, Maud Doom, and we'll get to all of that in good time, of course. But if you're joining us for the first time, you can find our full show notes at update.show. You can also join our Discord at rsbnb.com/discord, and our friends chat in-game if you want somewhere to hang out is Bits Bytes. I am Shane12088. Tanis can be found at Tanis79, and Thaxi is just Thaxi in-game.
There we go.
Okie dokie, folks. Introductions out of the way. Wilderness Ninja Strike. We knew that they had some updates on the horizon that we're going to remove the threat system from the wilderness, and here we are. The threat system is no more. That was in game for I think about 6 months at this point, 6 or 7 months at this point. Threat was in game, and it just didn't pan out the way they wanted it to. I'm going to read the dev note here, then we'll jump right into it. They say the wilderness was always intended as a high-risk, high-reward area, and when PvP was removed, they wanted to keep that element of danger to justify the more rewarding activities that found in the wilderness. And they say it was an experiment in whether PvM could achieve the same feeling of unpredictable risk, and the answer, at least for this version, has turned out to be no. It's possible a different implementation could have had different results, but there has been very little interest from players in actually wanting that kind of gameplay, with most either treating it as a nuisance or just an opportunity for even faster, more aggressive spawns to kill. Rest in peace, Wilderness Threat System.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.
Yeah.
Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Exactly. I mean, and I, for one, am not surprised, but I think the flaw was in the goal to begin with. What they said right there,
yeah,
they wanted it to, you know, be like the substitute for PvP. Well, it could never be that, and we don't want that. So that therein lied the problem, right? We didn't want it. And I don't know if I agree that it's more rewarding out there. I mean, there's a few things here and there, but no more, no less than anywhere else in the game world. I don't know if I buy into all that.
Yeah, and
especially now with the other changes we'll talk about later.
Yeah, you put some smoking bonus XP on and you skill to your heart's content, you could make certain skilling methods in other parts of the world eclipse that. Go ahead.
We'll take this a step further because I was this is a hot take. I think bringing PvP back to the was a mistake to begin with. I am still mad that they made a poll about it and only had an opt-in and no, hey, I don't want this option on the bringing back the wildy. It was effectively, hey, we're going to do this, but let's make sure everybody thinks that everybody else wants it. And for whatever decision-making was happening at the time, I think it was a mistake. I think that the wilderness as a PvP zone has never been a healthy thing since it was returned for RuneScape 3. Maybe for a few days, and after that, no. I mean, even now, the Demonic Skull, I mean, as a counterpoint, the Demonic Skull does still give you a flat 20% XP boost and stuff in the wilderness. Like, it is still a usable thing, it's still nice. Like, so there is still PvP that happens, but most of the actual PvP in the game is straight up, can you get away before the person who wants money kills you? And that is the threat system. And it is, again, just a nuisance set up to pit players against each other in a way that I think is not healthy for the game. Yeah. I am just generally, like, there should be some place for PvP. It is an interesting thing, right? They're slowly removing.
And it's very hard to design so, in modern era PvP, let alone in RS, I feel.
It's a very different system.
Well, I think it's hard to design in RS because of the way things have been before. It was this winner-take-all system. You did not see that in other games. It wasn't like, I don't play Forza, and then the next thing I know, I lost my car because I lost a race.
RuneScape,
like, what kind of shit
game
is that?
Has no damage parity. That's, I think, the real issue is that, like, in other games, you're looking like, I deal 10 damage and I take 10 damage. 10 damage hurts them probably as much as 10 damage hurts me, right? Unless you're at, like, the end game of whatever thing and you just have some very powerful setup. In RuneScape, you deal 10, 20, 100, 1,000 times as much damage as you take regularly. And having, you know, your health bar is your health bar. And if you are suddenly taking and dealing equal damage as your opponent, the game very rapidly becomes unbalanced. Which is a completely different game and a completely different meta, and that is cool and neat for the game, but it was not implemented and utilized because it is one of the things that is so challenging to do well. And so it has been a nuisance. And we got the threat system saying, hey, you know, we still want the wilderness to be the wilderness. But at the end of the day, it's a huge part of the map that was effectively unused for a decade. Like, a huge part of the map, right? And now they need space to put content, and they've got all this space out there. And they're using it. And people are spending more time out there, and they're saying, hey, we don't like this place being annoying. We don't like this place being a nuisance and being the wilderness.
We need a new city out there, right? Like, we need a new... You know, like,
I mean, we're moving in that direction, right?
Yeah.
4 and 3 is the precursor to something like that. So we'll see what ends up happening and where the lore ends up going on any of it. You know, maybe there's a portal out there that suddenly, you know,
maybe
we transfer a city from Infernus into the crater, right? Anything could happen. We
maybe necromancy is going to have a huge impact on the wilderness. Who knows, right?
I would really like that. That would be fantastic.
And we don't have, like, a Zamorakian city, do we? Like, they don't have their own place.
That's true. I mean, they've got, like, the ZMI. But pretty much everywhere the Zamorakians exist, they are antagonists. They are fightable NPCs. It's Chaos Druids. It's Dark Wizards. It's...
Yeah, and I mean, when you start pairing all this back, it was a system grafted on to replace a existing threat system that was PvP, and this one, you know, was just more of a nuisance than it was. And, you know, I think 100% right in removing it. Then we get to the aftermath of removing that in particular. You also have things now like the Cursed Wisp system being removed with this, and as such, Cursed Energy will automatically be converted on June 5th, and it is untradeable. And, you know, I have no problem with this. Sure, it was a good divination training method, but ever since it's come out, the number one thing that I have had associated with Cursed Wisp was luring.
Yeah.
So, this one is, you know, if you were gathering, if you were training your divination through that, it was the best, you know, XP in that regard. But it's also a small price to pay because it wasn't that much better than, you know, incandescent or something.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I don't think it's a huge loss, although, you know, should say it was the best.
Was it better than two ticking at the Hall of Memories?
No.
Okay.
No, but
no,
AFK-able-ish.
But that wasn't gathering. I'm talking about, like,
okay,
you know,
fair.
That method.
So,
yeah.
Like Tennis was saying earlier, most of the methods that they're changing or that exist in the wilderness to give a little extra XP you know, didn't need very big changes, right? You didn't go to the wilderness to do a lot of those things, frankly, you know, charming butterflies, whatever it was. There were like, think about the things that we all went to the wilderness for when there was PvP, and those are the things that are either remaining or are getting changed, right? So like, you think about things like safe cracking, which nobody bothered with you because you didn't have anything valuable on you, or unless they were just trying to truly be a nuisance. Runecrafting, similar kind of a deal. It was just kind of there, but that still has PvP attached to it. Warbands still have PvP attached to them, right? Like, in terms of
actually,
they just had all this use of
actually runecrafting. You don't need to interact with PvP at all anymore to use it, unless you use the demonic skull. That's the only
thing. No, that's the thing. If you're not, if you're runecrafting and you're not using the demonic skull, you're not doing it right, because so much of the profit from that comes from the thread that has a massively increased chance to the skull, plus it's the extra 100% XP. Like, the chance of you getting, like, just have freedom on your bar. Like, pay a little extra attention. If you get PK'd once in a while, fine. You know? Like, make sure that you're not risking anything crazy, and that's the correct way to, if you're going to be doing the runecrafting through the Abyss, you should have the skull on. So, like, still, you can do it without. If you just wanted to craft some runes, you can go and do it. But if you actually want to do it for XP or for profit, you really do need to be having the PvP on.
Yeah.
And small risk, right? You're risking 500k with the skull primarily. And, you know, maybe for bringing some extra, like, odds and ends, like a augmented sword or something, you're risking the price of an augmenter.
And then that's where it all starts to add up and whatnot. And, you know, I feel like we're in an okay spot right now, and I don't think we're going to see too much.
Like, as we go through the rest of these patch notes, very, very simply, they kept the things that we went to the wilderness before that were valuable are getting changes so that they fit the current system, or PvP is required for them. Right? Yep. That's the changes.
And that's probably the way it should have been since the beginning when they did the wilderness rework. So,
yep.
Then we go to flash events. They added a 15-minute world lock for receiving a reward bag in flash events. I might have done that once or twice or many times in Fresh Start Worlds as well.
I mean, even in main game, hunting those 100 reward bags for trim, you now actually have to spend 100 hours doing it rather than, you know, however many hours it was.
Yeah.
Bummer.
Also, generic reward bags now give a reduced Necronium salvage. Good change. We talked about that last week. Reduce the number of alchables coming into the game. Smart change there. And special bags have also had a major overhaul when it comes to their rewards, including less chance of Dragon Rider boots and gloves, reduced salvage, and vastly increasing the chance of getting Dark Onyx cores. And I did inquire about what vastly means, and they're not quite ready to talk about that yet. There is the possibility of a blog post coming on these kind of drop rates at some point in the future.
I am hoping it is somewhere in the 2 to 5 times as common range. Like, to be fully frank, if it's less than twice as common, I think it's not enough, given incredibly rare those things
were. We're crunching some numbers, and they were about 1 in 600 before this change from a flash event. So,
only from the big reward bags, not from the little ones. So you had 8 chances a day to earn these, right? Because they're once every 3 hours. So you had, like, if you reasonably got, like, you know, even 4 of those a day, right? If you logged on for half of those world events and the other times you weren't working or sleeping or doing other things, like, if you logged on for half of them every day, it would take you on average like 8 months or something. Right? Like, it's no.
Yeah, which is not okay, because that Dark Onyx core is a fun item to mess around with for its various use cases.
Yeah, it's something that is the fun toy that we would like people to have access to. It should have some value, but like, if an Iron Man wants one, the Iron Man shouldn't realistically need to play for 200 hours to obtain that kind of an upgrade. Like, that's just so not worth it.
Yeah.
The return there is not worth it. And you introduce this fun new option into the game that people just can't use because it's too rare.
And then they also did a quality of life fix on the bags this week. If you complete a wilderness event with a full inventory and bank, it will now store the rewards in a temporary inventory with the wilderness event host. And these rewards are then lost if they're not claimed before logging out. Because what would happen to this is it would just drop to the floor and you wouldn't get it if you had a full bank and inventory on this. So, fun little change around the edges there. Other smaller changes in the wilderness. Campfires are now present in the Wyvern area south of the Frozen Waste plateau. Good. Ripper Actually demons killable. Will now correctly perform their special attack. I gotta wonder how many kills got in because that wasn't happening. Oops. You can also now only interact with warbands and related content if you have PvP toggled on. Makes sense, because that is a PvP-centric yep. piece of content. Items related to the threat system have lost their effect, become untradeable, and can now be high-alked. And I think you looked into what some of the alk prices on these mm-hmm. were, and some of them, like...
Just, I mean, like, know. Obsidian Palmstone now alks for 5k. Like, it's just enough to say, hey, if you want to keep it in your bank as a fun, like, I have a rare thing, you still can. It's not like, oh my gosh, each one is worth 30k, and right, it's a ton of money.
It's not, and it's also not going to be the next half wine jug.
Well, and if, yeah, and it's effectively, they set their exchange price before this was just over 5,000 coins. Okay. It was hovering at 5,000. So they effectively said, hey, if you bought them off the GE, we'll give you your money back for the price of a nature yeah. rune. So
it's fair.
Fine. Good. I like it.
Now, when it comes to Wilderness Slayer, they also reduced the value of Mandrith's completion reward box, which is just another aspect that I feel like is more of a dud and we probably need to go into at yeah. some point, Wilderness Slayer, because it was supposed to be, you know, I think a good training method, but everybody kind of just went back to what they were doing beforehand with this.
Well, without the wilderness threat, maybe, because it does offer a lot of high-level tasks.
Yeah,
without, might be really good money, yes. even if they're not good XP.
Right. And you don't need yeah. to, of course, aggro pot with them, because everything's going to be aggressive to you. And now you don't need to worry about uninvited guests raining on your parade.
So maybe right. that's worth a new look now that the threat system's gone. Because at the time, I think I certainly dismissed it because yeah. I'm like, oh, I don't want to pay that kind of yeah. attention. I mean, Slayer is Slayer, sure, but like I don't want to have to run away once every yeah. while. So
Exactly. Yeah. I tried an abyssal task out there, and that's what happened.
Yeah, and I still haven't even done, you know, lava strikes because, first, I don't want to deal with PvPers, and then I didn't want to deal with the threat level because we all saw how that worked out when Shane sent me out there. Sure. So this actually might give me a chance to get out there and do, you know.
And then that also might have an interesting ramification, this entire threat system change on the price of Searing Ashes and such. Interesting.
Well, and also on the price of the tier 88 two-hand weapons.
Yes, yeah. That's what I was thinking.
The staff, yes. the staff, bow, and maul are all going to be dropping a little bit, which I think is good.
Yeah,
there are a lot of like, I mean, looking at you, bone blowpipe for 4 mil. You're just better than that bow. Straight up, you just can't use ammunition. So unless somebody wants to spend money on arrows, you're the option. Bow has a good spec, so don't get me wrong, it's still fine. But, or, I mean, they changed that too. But we're moving on. But yes, very interesting changes to yeah. some of that stuff.
They also modified Mandrith's task list to have a higher favor to Berserk and Ash Demons, which were the trash out of ED4 that they added into the wilderness. Here's one. I don't know if this is going to be controversial. Brawling gloves no longer function based on the wilderness level and now just boost the XP rate by a base amount, and they're no longer obtainable outside the wilderness. And I think obtainable outside the wilderness before was just the Maw and some of the Prif Elves, right?
It's a Prif Elves, yeah.
Okay. Pretty much. I think there may have been something else that like had a niche chance to drop them out of some reward box somewhere, but reasonably speaking, them only dropping out of the wilderness as an item that only works in the wilderness, or should only work in the wilderness reasonably if you want to optimize them, makes sense to me.
They're a lot more rare from the thieving than they once were. I mean, when early days, they dropped a lot, but now, and I don't think these are very bad changes. You know, there's some niche cases where, you know, I can remember being in skilling competitions and going out to the wildy, getting to the level where you get the highest XP rate, you get 4 or 5 of your friends, everybody brings, you know, divine use if you're, or magics or whatever, you know, whatever divine thing you're skilling on, and just feed you while you're, you know, and the XP was just, oh, it was so fun. But that's very niche, right? Like, it's not going to make me cry, and I can still use them if I want to go out there. And now it ain't so annoying, because there's no threat level.
Right.
Yeah, so, and it's a game of give and take, really, when you put it in that frame, which I think is important. Yeah. They also reduced the Hunter and Agility XP on Charming Moths, but with this, the Demonic Skull bonus for those Charming Moths has been increased from 20 to 40%.
Good. So effectively, they said, hey, this method isn't good enough. I mean, or it wasn't good enough to begin with.
But it needs the risk associated with it.
Well, if you want charms and you want to use this method to hunt charms, you can still do so, but it's going to be less rewarding, which is fair given the threat system's gone. But also, if you do want to do it for XP, back to the PvP system. I don't think it's good enough even with a 40% buff to warrant PvP. You just have better hunter options, to be totally honest. But like, somebody wanted to, they could.
It just makes me laugh of the thought of someone out catching butterflies and then a PvPer just going,
yeah, I mean, who's killing people? Like, oh no, what are they going to drop? They can't drop their charms to you. Charms are kept on death. I don't know how that works in the wilderness. To be totally honest, they're probably just lost. Like, why? Again, yeah. It falls into one of those things where PvP in this case exists solely to be a nuisance, and hopefully there's not going to be somebody who really wants to be a nuisance like that. And the person just gets their extra XP and goes on their way.
Dude, this is RuneScape.
There's going to be somebody.
Agility course was a thing.
We always act as though there is the chance for somebody.
Oh, yeah, and you had your friend out there who hunted people and took trophies.
He did have the wall of shame, yeah. Yeah.
All right. And then also, the safes in the Rogue's Castle have had their cooldown period increased from 5 minutes to 10 minutes. On this, and you know, on the surface, this is a 50% nerf in the thieving XP on that, and that effectively takes it from about 600k XP an hour down to 300k XP an hour. But the thing with these safes is that they were fully AFK, and you know, it just so happens we have somebody in our community who goes by the name of Thieves, has 200 mil thieving on multiple accounts, and he actually had a really interesting take on this from his Fresh Start Worlds experience. He said that he has a feeling that Fresh Start Worlds contributed to this change, just like the Croesus Hunter changes last week. And he said, as a person who got 200 million thieving on safes in Fresh Start Worlds, this change is probably warranted. Ultimately, it was 600k XP an hour XP rate. That was AFK with very minimal requirements to access before, and 300k XP an hour now seems fair. And at the very least, the portable obelisk and shards have more use now in incorporating wilderness safes in a full safe run, which is still upwards of 1 million XP an hour, though not AFK. And that also fits, I think, within the original intention of safe cracking as well. And it takes some of the extreme AFK XP on safe cracking out of the equation. And, you know, I feel like this is going to be another lightning rod of a patch note this week with this, because there's always going to be the people who want the best XP rates for AFK. But you need to have a lean-in method on this.
They usually don't throw the same kind of shit fits. What I'm interested in, they still flashed, right? Or did they not do that? Because I think
they did. But you just didn't need to.
Okay.
Yeah, so 600k AFK.
Yeah, if anything, I would have made it where that was more of a thing, right? Like where you had to click on the flashes, as you do with all the other safes. But still, at the end of the day, is there anyone out there that can say they didn't know safe cracking was really, really good? I mean, we all kind of know that, so it's not a bad thing. That I mean, it's pretty huge. I mean, it's a big reduction, but you know, I do a full safe cracking run without those chests. And I do just fine. The difference is, I mean, you have to do some quests to get to some of the other chests out there, right? But this doesn't, like, kill me. And, hey, it might even make some other methods, you know.
Exactly. And in further discussion, that's exactly what Thieves was saying, is it really brings back the idea of a full safe run to get the most optimal amount of XP.
Yeah, I agree with that. So, I mean, once again,
and I mean, I'm going to listen to somebody who has 200 mil thieving on multiple accounts and compete in Fresh Start on this.
It would seem like a good idea, yeah.
So, Bloodwood trees were also changed so that they now all benefit from the Infernal Puzzle Box, because in the wilderness they now offer no additional benefit compared to regular Bloodwood trees. So and I mean, this is a good thing as well, because you go on your bolt run. Previously, you would only have that benefit in the wilderness. Now you got that same benefit all across the world if you have the Infernal Puzzle Box. So I'm happy with that change. And, you know, in many ways, I see that as a buff, honestly, this one.
Well, we don't know how much the box helped. Those wilderness trees stayed up for a very long time. But that's something.
Yeah.
It's some compensatory thing to say, hey, we know that the criminal bolts need to continue to come into the game, so we're going to make that happen.
It's a game of give and take. Right. And then two other final little quick ones. The demonic skull now works from the inventory, and Kelgarian demons in the wilderness are now aggressive.
I like that you don't have to have the skull equipped. They effectively just said, hey, if you want to do a bunch of these activities, the skull is now part of your, you know, things you should have
with
you. Yeah,
just have it on your person.
Based on the XP boost it gives everywhere, as well as the, like, you know, but the fact that it puts you in PvP, I like that you can have a different pocket slot. I'm not exactly sure what pocket slot I would want to risk with it. I'd have to give that some thought. But either way, that's fair.
All right. And then with that, we move into general patch notes. And we open up with this one. Players who open their bank while it contains a large amount of farm animals will no longer crash their client. Instead, players in the state will have an additional tooltip information disabled in their bank until they reduce the number of stored animals.
Tannis. Mm-hmm. Do you know what we just learned? We just learned that Shane will never be able to see a tooltip in his bank again.
Hey, I keep my bank clean. Well, actually, it's not very clean.
What? We saw the video, Shane.
I know. It got better a bit, then it got worse again.
No,
but I keep all my animals in my storm barn, and I'm only at about 45, 50 out of 60 in my storm barn, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm alarmed to hear it, but fair enough. I have so many eggs in my bench. I am not at the point where I'm hitting this limit yet, but
right,
I'm really curious how many animals one has to have to get to that point, but I'm certainly not going to test it.
I had a lot, and then we thinned out after I hit 120, but...
Yeah, exactly. When I was raising dinosaurs and raising dragons for money.
Yep.
It was full a lot, but
see, the way to prevent that from happening is just check in multiple times a day and keep cycling out with that. You might run into a bit of an issue if you're doing the dinosaurs and not checking every day, but I mean, it's just a quick reason to log in.
But you can't sell. You can get more than you can sell, basically.
Yeah.
By the time it comes.
Yeah.
So, and they add up over time.
Basically, yeah. And now we're on to our weekly accessibility changes, which are very, very nice, of course. Footprints are now more clearly visible during the tourist trap quest. Right on.
Nice.
Yay, because did you do that one in Fresh Start, Shane?
No, I did not.
I did.
You had to just know where to go.
And this is going to be really nice. Like, really, really nice. Good job, guys.
Too many changes to the desert had left these footprints a little buried in some places.
Yeah.
Shifting sands and all that.
Also improved the lighting in the Rogues Castle safe cracking room. Mm-hmm. So that's another good one.
For the folks who AFK there so they can be more easily seen by the PvPers who are coming to be a nuisance.
And players can now toggle whether targeted movement abilities target scenery. This can be done in the targeting section under the combat and action bar category of the settings. This currently applies to bladed dive and dive.
Sure.
I'm betting this is, and the only place I'm immediately thinking of where this would have an impact to me would be Krosis, because it's my jocks and people. I don't run around bladed diving to get around. I don't do that.
Nope, neither. But
I can think of a few places. Like, I'm not 100% sure what this means. I haven't actually gone to test this. But if it just allows you to bladed dive to an interactable object or to like the space next to an interactable object. Okay, yeah, that's what I was thinking. This is going to be really nice for a few places. You can bladed dive to the sandstone machine in Amlod. Or actually, I guess that's in Malir? No. Ithil. Oh my gosh, Ithil. You can, into the sandstone machine in Ithil to get... You bladed dive there and then you surge north. That will line you up directly. It'll put you at the obelisk for summoning.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up.
three or four tick travel to a summon to the summoning obelisk for the extra 20% XP and charm save chance for Amulet Hour. And there's a few other places where it was used. Usually skilling, oddly. Most of the things I think with this are skilling use, not PVM use, which I am fully okay with.
Wouldn't you use this in Big Game Hunter as well?
You could,
if you wanted to bladed dive to a bait pad or something. If that's how that worked, yeah. That's cool, though. I like that. I like that that's an option.
Lighting in the Ripper Demon Cave was also adjusted so players can notice hostile NPCs with no issues. Good.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Why do I feel like I've seen this exact patch note before?
Because I feel like this was something that was talked about last year when they made those changes to the Ripper Demon Cave to prevent the AFKing, which was the episode you were on that. And I feel like they might have done a pass there too, but this is probably a subsequent pass.
Okay. I feel like I've done this before. It's good. I mean, congratulations, you're making a dark cave undark. Bummer.
Woo!
Good for accessibility, bad for spook.
Also, improved lighting in the Sophanim Slayer dungeon. How is that one for
you, Travis? No, I love that one. I love it. Good.
Also, I spent
a lot of time there.
Improved the colors of the Pirate's Hideout building when textures are off, and the Rogue's Castle building when textures are off.
More changes to clean up the wilderness because nobody had been there for a long time, and everybody realized it may have been a little ugly. Given they did the full. Yeah. Shout out to Mark Black Witch's full overhaul of it last year. I think some of these buildings just look dingy in comparison. So, good work.
Yeah. And there's your patch notes for the week, everybody. It definitely got some highlights in there. And I think that was the way to do it if the wilderness threat system was to be removed. So, round of applause for that. I think that's where we should have landed last year on that. But before we move on and talk about the elephant in the room, we're going to thank some Patreon supporters because without you guys, we wouldn't be doing what we do here each and every week. And this week in particular, I'd like to thank Alfie S., Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Beekeeper Steve, Big Huge Rat, Chunk the Monk, Cycle RS, Drama Free, Dura Max, Enrique V., Free Milk, Jacob G., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski, Ling01, Mohan V., Nate the Great, Pernasius, Ricky A., RS Nerdherd, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Shirtpants, Stub Eve, Tabby, The Naked Captain, The Dabbing Goat, Tim, Tom V., Zant, and Zazakon. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us. And if you're wondering what all this is about, head on over to patreon.com/rsbnb. There we have our... monthly bits, an entire back catalog of 55 plus bonus shows talking about one specific RuneScape subject, going pretty deep in them. This past month, we talked about how RuneScape can grow. In the past, we talked about drop tables. We've talked about holiday events. We've talked about tier lists in skilling, dailyscape, PVM. And, of course, the one that broke Tannis's brain last year, Legacy Combat. A whole fun selection of these episodes where we most of the time go in and learn something. And it's a fun experience all around. So for as little as $1 a month, you gain access to that entire back catalog. And you'll be helping fund the cost for hosting and production of the podcast. You'll also get a mention in our show notes. We also do have a VIP tier where you'll get a special VIP rank on Discord, a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo versions of the podcast, in addition to everything else. And for $5 a month, if you want to give the ultimate gift, you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. In addition, to everything else. And we're going to have a discussion at some point, Tanis, about our Hot Ones challenge, because we have that in here as a goal for when we get to 500. But come May 1st, Patreon is actually getting rid of the goal system, so we'll have to decide if that's something we keep up or if we change to another way of measuring that. But that's a discussion we'll, of course, have with our Patreon supporters, because this is an offering that is built, of course, to allow you guys to show your appreciation for the podcast, and as such, we want to build it in such a way that you're going to get something out of it that you want. And that's why we poll every monthly bit topic, why we have our monthly roundtables where Patreon members can come in and discuss and just chat about what's up in RuneScape, what they've been doing, that sort of thing, and just kind of air any grievances. And, you know, it doesn't most of the time end up in airing grievances, but it's a fun discussion nonetheless. And, you know, we might have some grievances this month. Let me just say that, I think, based on some of the content we've seen. So, but if any of this sounds interesting to you, or you just want to support the podcast, patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone. It means the world to us.
Thanks.
Okay. Okay. Fractured Staff of Armadale and Anime Dead changes this week. We were told these were coming and going to be announced on the Thursday, our recording day, and they're going to launch next month. And there was a lot of talk this week about, you know, is it going to be a heavy-handed nerf? What's it going to be? And I think the view from 30,000 feet up right now is that it's being accepted quite well, I think, based on what I've seen so far in the first few hours.
It seems very much like people are asking questions about how things are going to work rather than just raging at the machine on this one.
And, which is good.
Good job, RuneScape community. This is unusual for you, and I'm very proud. This is growth. Keep it up.
Agree. So let's start with Animate Dead. The way we're going to do this is we're going to go through their assessment of what's wrong, the proposed changes, and then talk about where we think that lands. So to start off with Anime Dead, overall performing too well, with little downside. They note that it was synergistic with other sources of damage reduction, which created a scenario where lots of low-level damage hits could no longer threaten players. And they talk about the good of Anime Dead and that it has improved the viability of tank armor. But Anime Dead let players ignore certain boss mechanics, such as Zamorak's Rune of Destruction. That's the example that was given. It also created a large amount of design debt that was having to be considered when creating new encounters. So what this means is that it limited the ability to create new mechanics or combat that just couldn't be avoided with Anime Dead. And that's where we're at with this. And I think anybody who's used it will know that, and they'll see that. And as such, the proposed changes are that it cannot reduce damage by more than 60% previously, as in live game right now as of recording on March 15th, was 75%. The damage reduction now only uses 25% of the defense level. Live version in-game as of recording was 33%, and it now only works versus core damage types, melee, magic, and ranged, which really also takes away its ability to soften typeless damage, as an example. And with this,
typeless, poison, and some others got left in particular.
And I think that's fine, because those are designed to kind of be mechanic-based. And the one that initially, I think, came up to my mind, and that was Zuck, back from when I was fighting that. But
I mean, yeah, you've got stuff like that. You've got stuff like, I mean, to use another example that's like something that's not typeless damage, like the poison from Frozen Wyverns would be reduced by this, and reduced. It wouldn't be reduced by any type of like other anti-poison or anything, reasonably, like relatively speaking. And so that was a core mechanic of fighting those things that Animate Dead allowed you to, in large part, ignore. Generally speaking, right, like we're going from 75 to 60%, that is the case where if you're not taking enough damage to overcap your Animate Dead, effectively it's saying, hey, we're going to reduce, like if you take a hit of 300, you're only going to take, instead of taking 75 damage, you now take, like, I think it's 120? Quick math, yeah, that's right. Right, so like that's where you're below the cap, you take slightly more damage. So that reduces the reduction from those small hits. Stuff like that Zimmerax Rune of Destruction, right, where 5, 10, 15% of damage chipped through your protection prayers where it didn't before, or your like full protection were using defensives, now Animate Dead would reduce that to nothing because it was effectively saying, hey, 75% of that small damage hit. Now you're going to be taking more damage from things like that. And so that is a, effectively they reduced the power of it by 20% there to 80% of what it originally was. Same thing with the defense level reduction going from 33 to 25%. We're looking at about 25%, and that's the cap. So if you're taking large damage hits, you also get about the 80%. These aren't multiplicative, right? So you don't look at these and be like, oh my gosh, 60% and 25%. Oh my gosh, that's so much less than 75 and 33. No, no.
Yeah, no, no, no.
In either case, you're doing about 20% less than you were before. So this is still relatively large for everything it works on. And what they've effectively done is saying, hey, this mechanics that are designed to kill you, that are designed to give you chip damage in particular, we can still have those things do their job. Right, that chip poison damage, that chip typeless damage, those big typeless hits that you need to mitigate in other ways, you still have to do that. I think that that's probably the correct direction to take this, is that if they're worried about it being too powerful, this is a reasonable way to curb that power back and still force us to do mechanics in future content. So, and past content, for
that matter. And I also think that these Animate Dead changes still preserve the Animate Dead ability when paired with tank armor for being a good learning mechanic for people.
Yes, absolutely. It doesn't touch the amount of melee damage you're going to take from Hellware, but you have Crit Bloom, or you know whatever it is, right? Melee and magic damage in particular with Crit Bloom that stacks with this, that stacks with Protection Prayers. So if you need to like be tanky to survive things and see mechanics in practice, this allows you to do that. It just doesn't allow you to completely ignore and skip and learn to skip mechanics. This actually forces you to perform the game as intended, air quotes. Which, of course, as intended is however we find it, but I like it. I like this as a change.
Yeah, and you know we'll have to wait and see what the final result is. And it's important to note, and one thing I actually want to highlight on this post before we move on to the discussion on the Fractured Staff, is that this is from Mod Doom, new community manager. We'll do his introduction after this segment. But he said, we're opening this discussion today, weeks before any potential release, in order to hear your thoughts on our proposed changes and to get your feedback. And he says, nothing of what you're about to read is set in stone. This is an important change for us to make, but it's equally important we make these changes in the right time and in the right way. I think that's how the RuneScape community needs to hear it, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, and we'll see what content comes out in the next few days that either condemns or supports this from other people in the community. But from my perspective, I think this is probably a healthy change for the game from something that was overperforming and has been overperforming for probably much too long.
Yes.
I think these are overdue, but that does not mean
we're pushing 2 years on Animate Dead.
Overdue, but no less justified because of it. Yeah. So anybody who's getting mad about that, fooey, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
to be honest.
I also want to say that skipping boss mechanics with this, maybe, you know, of course you can use that to push score and whatnot, but at the same time, I think if there was ways for boss mechanics to be skipped, they would be baked into the boss and not just based on, you know, by being able to negate damage or, you know, hit him with the sledgehammer. Cheese. Yeah. Yep.
I think this does kind of show It look, I agree with it, but I do think it kind of does show some bias, because yes, you should not be able to skip boss mechanics with tank, but I don't see the same enthusiasm, even though we're going to talk about the crit stick. There's still plenty of other things out there that when it comes to DPS, if you can skip it, more power to you, buddy, seems to be the attitude. So it is a double standard when it comes to that. Now, like I said, I don't mind. It needed to be done. But I do think there's a definite thing in this game where it's all about DPS. I mean, it just is. It's all about DPS. We shit on tanks. We shit on skills. We shit on everything else. But DPS, perfect.
I don't know who does that in particular. Are you J-mods or players or...
It's all big circle. But, I mean, just with the way things end up being going, right? Now, do I have Animate Dead? Yeah. Do I have Crit Bloom? Yeah. Why? Because I'm in a very niche place where I can't do the same things as a lot of people are doing when it comes to their mouse movement and they're jumping around and all that kind of stuff. So I have to make up for it sometimes with tankiness. Now, is that going to take some of that down? Yeah. And that is a little different because in other MMOs, it's kind of one of those things that you can make up for things through gear, which you get through grinding, so you spend your time. That is, being reduced here, but that's whatever. I don't think you should have to be you shouldn't have to be like elite just to participate in content. Hmm. This is more of a step in that direction, but it is what it is.
I don't know if that's the case with Animate Dead.
But that's what I'm saying, Shane. For 9 out of 10 people out there, it's not the case.
Well, no, and I see where you're coming from too, right? The idea kind of is that you can't just throw on tank gear and go and see the content and do it slowly and work your way through it, right? In this case, the tank gear is no longer going to allow you to do that. It's just you have whatever your literal ability and skill is with damage will still allow you to skip mechanics potentially, which is my counter argument to that, I suppose. But at the same time, you're not able to take it solely if you want to, and that could be punishing in some cases.
Right.
And
that's okay. Okay.
Yeah, well, you can't make up for it through the grind, through the time, right? Like right. There was always a thing to where if I couldn't do it, at least if I was dedicated enough, if I worked hard enough, I could get through it, right?
Right.
And that's all I'm looking for. Like I'm not trying to compare. I'm not doing the measuring contest. But I'm not wanting to be on the high scores.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if in the use case you're providing, if 60. Down to 60 from 75 is going to have much of an impact.
See, and I don't know. And
changed either.
And even if it is, like I said, it's not that like I don't believe in putting the needs of a few people in front of everyone. I don't agree with that. I don't believe in that. But I'm just making this point, right? Because the same isn't. It isn't the same on the DPS side.
That's fully valid, and it's something that we should think about. And there's something, too, that comes into the design of the content.
As well. Yes, absolutely.
Some content is very much designed to be successful, and I think they've done a generally good job recently of at least having some mode that you can see and experience the content to some degree, right? Like, having a normal mode versus hard mode, as much as I hate the enrage scaling system, having an enrage scaling system... That, like, you can go in and do a 0% or a normal mode kill and see it and get most of the same drops. Now, the problem there is that if you wanted to earn something like a crit stick, pre-nerf, whatever it is, that, like, that would probably not be reasonable, if you weren't, if you're not, you have to have a lot of, like, that extra moxie, whatever it is. And that's because that's only accessible on those hard modes.
That's fair.
In terms of accessibility, that is a hard thing to justify.
Yeah.
And if you want an example of something where you can do it right, look at the Arc Glacier. Mm-hmm. That is a boss that's done right so that everybody can participate wherever they fit in. Right? I still enjoy doing that boss because... And I'm not doing the same as everyone else, but it doesn't matter to me. So, that's an example of doing it right to where I don't necessarily have to do that, but there's not very many things that are designed like that, right? Like, that's it, actually. So, but maybe if we went more in that direction, then this wouldn't be such a big deal.
Yeah, and then that also ventures into, like you're saying, the boss encounter design. And, it's very much a two-pronged fork on that, right? You can attack it from the Animate Dead side, but you can also attack it from the encounter side as you're talking about now. Mm-hmm. And I think both are very important to consider going forward. And I think we had a good path from something like Archglacier to Zamorak that has story 0% and then up to whatever enrage you want on that. So,
mm-hmm.
All right. Should we move on to the crit stick? Anything else on animate from either of you guys?
Nope.
Okay. So the crit stick, the Fractured Staff of Armadyl, is having its special tweaked because, and this is going to be their ramification first, or their justification for it first, rather, and then the changes that are proposed. So first off, it was based off of auto attacks, which means that the weapon had an excessively high upkeep cost. And we're talking about the water runes there.
Mm-hmm.
And
any runes, blood runes, soul runes.
Sure. All of them. Sure. In this day and age, especially. The damage value is of individual shots from the spec. It's hard to adjust due to the combat system just passing the auto attack through for the staff. Now, the weapon is putting a big design restriction as well on the critical strike system, as the recursive nature of the special attack means that any future unlocks that affect critical strikes push the special close to going infinite. And then the damage output of the staff is hitting the limits of what Jagex was comfortable with and far beyond anything that they had previously introduced, which means that they're less able to create new rewarding upgrades for Magic players. And then the changes that are being proposed for this are that the special attack will no longer deal auto attack damage, but instead the extra hit will be passed through as an ability. And the special attack can no longer trigger off of itself, ending, of course, the recursive nature of it. And the special attack now deals between 60 and 120 ability damage each hit with an average damage of 90%. I also did have a conversation with David briefly today. He's our other PVM guy around here. And he said overall, he's happy with the changes. They look great. And this is probably how the weapon should have worked in the beginning. The crit lightning is a bit weaker than people will probably want it. And the anime dead changes will make AFK and God War Dungeon 2 harder, but that's okay because it was clearly too strong. In total, factoring in both the animate dead changes and the crit stick changes, he feels if they were to fix arrows and make melee more accessible, he feels that combat will be in a pretty good place after these changes balance-wise.
I generally agree with this. I think David's got it right here for sure. The biggest thing for me is that if you actually look at what they've done to the staff, right, all of these nerfs have a reason for them, right? The way auto attacks work make it very, very hard to quantify this as a nerf because the staff had such a variable level of power before.
Yeah.
But, and this obviously standardizes that to a very serious degree, right? When you crit, you get roughly 2,000 extra damage. Now, that's the special. At least as these changes are worded. Now, that is significantly less than you got before, and something that made the staff so interesting, I think, to a lot of people that is being taken away and that I am a little sad about, the recursive nature, the reason it was brought back, the reason people loved it so much is because it did have those high highs. If you crit, and then your crit, it felt so good to just get a bunch of those. You could just randomly out of nowhere do a ton of damage, and that's super cool. But on the whole, on average, the damage change of this, I mean, this, there's no real way to sugarcoat it, is a large nerf to a staff that at the end of the day is still a tier 95, and that every time you crit will still do a large chunk of extra damage, right? This, the special itself isn't innately being made useless, it is just being made much less useful. And this does a couple of things that both help and hurt, right? In some ways, this harms magic because it does. Magic right now is so tied to critical strikes because of the staff in particular, right? You've got the ring, the upgraded to the Seer's ring with the Rick's Matriarchs, the Channeler's ring that gives the extra crit chance on these things. And so you focused on having channeled attacks. Like, there are so many things that really did it. Your goal was to get as close to that going infinite as you possibly could, and that as a mechanic made the staff do more damage than it should have and made it a huge bump, right? The difference between being a magic user with staff and without staff was a very almost unreasonably large jump. No, it was the first tier 95. It needed to be powerful, and I respect that. But I think this is probably a little overdue, given that it, like, that special attack on its own, I believe, was overperforming. Now it will still do an interesting thing. I think, as written, it is still, unquestionably worth using. When you think about the average person has a crit chance between 20 and 30%, give or take, on average, and or the average person who will be using this does, and you look at the amount of damage, the amount of number of ticks you get over half a minute, which is the length of the spec. The spec still does so significantly much damage. The 50% adrenaline cost is certainly justified. It is still unquestionably worth using, that special attack. It now just doesn't burn through billions of runes, and it, like, still does that significant damage without being something that has a damage ceiling that was maybe potentially much too high.
Yeah.
The thing that I think this does very nicely is it also brings into very much viability using things like Greater Concentrated Blast with a wand and orb, right? That level is now much closer to this. And you get to use that other cool unlock thing that came from this same boss, right? Crit Stick is still cool. Crit Stick is still used. All that stuff is still good. But maybe the rest of magic gets a chance to, like, shine now, right? It was the same thing with magic where bows were, and still are, we're not going to talk about it, so much worse than crossbows in many situations. And so you saw somebody using a bow and you're like, what are you doing? Like, I hope you're over there having fun doing what you love, because
you were too, right?
Yes. Oh, unquestionably. I chose to do this because I liked bows, but I did this with the full knowledge that I was making a choice that would decrease my damage, right? And the same thing is kind of true if you have if you own a crit stick and you want to use your wand and orb, sorry. You know, that is where we're at. And so this maybe brings those a little bit more into viability by pulling things like a closer across the board. And I really like that. And it also opens them up significant reward space later to add, right? They can still build on that crit chance of magic. They could add a weapon that, like, hits 12 channeled strikes in a row, and with a channeler's ring on, you get up to, like, 80% crit chance.
Who knows? That could be the tier 95 wand and orb.
Yes, and that would be so cool. I mean, right, because that also works really nicely with Concentrated Blast. The channel, the nature of that ability works very nicely with that. They could have such a cool... They can still index into that crit chance for magic now without putting the risk of staff go burr, you know?
And I do, and I must say, you know, even with these changes, if I was to get heavily back into PVM, I would probably go magic, and I think I would still hunt the staff, if I'm being honest.
Yes.
I would still look to get one of these. Tannis,
that special is still powerful. So,
Tannis, do you have any thoughts on this? You just have Crit Bloom, you don't have the Crit Stick, right?
Yeah, that would have taken another year of pounding plate bodies.
What do you think of these changes based on what we were talking with Animate Dead? I mean,
it's a good start.
Okay. I want to watch the rune market to see where this goes after this, if I'm being honest.
I want to watch the rune market and the staff market. I'm curious if the merchers have decided these are no longer worth holding on to. And we finally get, you know, them released into the market for the average player.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be fun.
I think the staff is approaching what might be a reasonable price. But I think it will still continue to drop a little bit, and I think that's very reasonable.
All right. Anything else on Animate Dead or Fractured Staff from either of you?
Nope. Okay. Good changes as far as I'm concerned. I like the direction they're going with them. If they do anything, I hope it is minor tweaks only from this.
Tannis?
I think it's good. I think it's for the health of the game.
Yeah, agree. And, you know, I think we would have had a different conversation had the Chincendary stuff gone through the same path, if I'm being honest. And it comes down to communication. It comes down to communication. And that's what I forgot on our Chincendary episode, is that it comes down to communication. And that's rule number one. And we're going to go on to our next segment right now, which is the live stream this week, previewing Murder on the Border. Well, I keep calling it Mortar on the Border. That's interesting. But Murder on the Border. We're not going to go too much into the behind the scenes of this quest, because we do like to cover all that stuff on Quest Week. But the short of it is that Quest Murder on the Border is launching on the 20th. You'll need level 30 construction and have all your tier 1 buildings built at Fort 4 and 3. And if you want to learn more about a bit of a preview about what's happening with the storyline, there's a news post on that, as well as some mechanics included into how you'll solve the murder. You can find that in the news post or watch the live stream. But we're going to save all of the discussion on the quest until next week. The only things I think I want to mention from the Murder on the Border part of the live stream were that this is a quest that is designed to tie gameplay and narrative together, leaning into the RuneScape point-and-click nature within a murder mystery narrative. The big focus will be ensuring that this storyline is player-focused. That was one of the complaints that they heard about the Legacy of Zamorak season, in particular making sure the player's involved in the story. And there's going to be more dialogue options than there was in recent quest content, which I think all the questers among us will be happy about.
I'm not being railroaded into the path of my character with everybody else's character? Oh, that's so nice.
Because that's what we heard throughout Legacy of Zamorak, so I'm pleased about that. It's going to be a fun week next week.
And, I'm wrong. I like that storytelling, but yeah, this is exciting.
And when Modzera was talking about where this idea came from, about needing to solve a murder mystery, he said that Mod Shrike initially came up with the idea. Of course, a friend of the podcast, and with this, Modzera also had a connection to murder mysteries as a younger person, and just loves working with these characters. So that's how we wound up with Murder on the Border. So we'll be giving that the typical RSBNB update quest week treatment next week. But I don't want to go too much into the spoilers around that, because I know we do have a fairly large quest contingent here who are listening to the podcast. We're going to kind of go past that. But this live stream, so they opened up by saying that there's going to be new opportunities for player feedback. First, there's going to be a post on Friday regarding proposed comp cape changes, and they'll also be using the in-game poll to pull some trim requirement changes. We're sitting on pins and needles on that, and of course, as we're recording on Thursday, we'll have reaction to that next week. I honestly wonder where they're going with this angle. My gut reaction is, please don't make things more grindy.
I'm very interested to see what direction they want to go with it as well. I mean, in the past, they've been moving away from that. I don't imagine they'll reverse course. I mean, removing things like Castle Wars. But I will also say that I am sure that, you know, when they're polling, combat is probably the other topic that I would say goes in this realm, to be fair. But I think polling changes to comp and trim, if you want players who are going to be involved and have an opinion, let me tell you how often those players are going to have comp or trim, right? Yeah. Like, in terms of the active members of our community, certainly not everybody. Certainly, maybe not even the majority, but certainly the majority of players who are some level of completionist are willing to put their voice out in regarding changes to those requirements, right? That is, you hear the new comp rec come out and everybody's either complaining or saying, oh, it wasn't bad, or, you know, whatever it is. Like, that is something that people have strong opinions on. If you're making large changes to it, there will be feedback, and I am interested to see what they are going to give us, because I'm sure I will have my own as well.
Tanis, where do you land on this? Because I know you're not actively hunting comp or trim. You're going for 120L. Where do you land on this?
Well, I kind of feel for Jagex when it comes to this, because they're damned if they do and damned if they don't.
That's true.
If they make it easier, then people will be like, oh, it was hard when I did it. That's bullshit. The same people will be bitching about that. Oh, I have to get my comp cape back. So it just doesn't, like, they can't, what they're going to do, they're going to piss people off. Right?
The funny thing is, it's going to be the conversation.
Yeah, it's going to be the same people, right? I feel like you're going to bitch either way. So do you want, so then it comes down to, do you want to make that more accessible, or is that the elite status symbol in the game? You know, I feel like if you do make it more accessible, you should make it more accessible in not eliminating grind, but eliminating, you can do quality of life changes with it, right? Like you can do things to just take away some of the stupidness. Like
make the aspects. Worst requirements a little more palatable.
Yeah.
Give me a, like, you know, a guaranteed drop when I hit 10,000 kills on a champion scroll.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Things like that where we all know people, I mean, everybody who's done Trim, it has, like, oh, there's one scroll that I went 18,000 kills dry on. Stuff mm-hmm. like that for those kind of requirements would be wonderful.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the kind of feedback that they would get almost universal positivity on, I believe. I don't think somebody's going to look at that and be like, oh, well, when I did it. That person's going to show you their prestige 2 of killing hobgoblins and be like, all right, I still got this, though.
Yeah.
Back in my day, and they'll enjoy complaining about it, to be honest, right? Like, that's my expectation.
And to be fair, we could be completely wrong about it. It could be the entire different direction that it makes it all easier and more accessible. But we'll know on Friday. And I just say that again, recording on Thursday here, just so nobody says that we got this wrong, because, you know, the internet loves correcting and commenting on that. And, you know,
as long as they do not re-add Castle Wars to my Trim.
Yes.
We're chilling. Almost anything else in this game, we can vibe. So you make me spend 8 months standing still or dancing with somebody inside of Castle Wars, myself probably, we're going to have other conversations.
All right.
What a bad requirement.
They also want to do a community hit list. And no, this is not a hit list for people to be eliminated.
So we all have one of those.
You do. It sounds like you do.
So yes, things that need to be changed or improved in some kind of a way, I'm assuming.
Yes, a community post addressing the most requested bugs and tweaks. And with this, they'll do them and they'll go into a ninja strike.
Nice.
Good. All right, and then this brings us to new community manager Mod Doom, who greeted the chat. Hello there, look at all you fun little pogchamps. I chuckled
and
at
Twitch
that.
Twitch chat probably responded by posting an awful lot of either whatever the, what's the cringe guy, the guy with the face palm emote or the little pug shape. I'm sure it was a mix of both. God, Twitch chat, we love you.
So, Mod Doom, new community manager, he played RuneScape a long time ago, has recently picked up the game again. And, of course, the number one question was about his name. And he said it came from growing up playing Doom and loves MF Doom. Fairly obvious on that.
That makes sense.
Then we get into what his core mission is going to be. And Tanis, I'd be interested to get your persuasion angle take on this, because we've been through a lot here and we've talked about communication a lot in the past. Mm-hmm. He says he'll be focusing on championing the player voice and building that voice into everything that Jagex does for RuneScape. And it's at that point, I also want to say that in his presentation, it looks very professional as well. And from what we've seen here so far this week and the Reddit post, I think he's a good communicator so far. What's your take on what we've seen? Because I know we've looked at a number of people like this in the past.
So far, I think you know, he's saying and doing the right thing. When he said, you know, want to listen, you know, put the player voice first, I can't help but to think, okay, but whose voice? Because we are not all on the same page. So whose voice is going to be heard? And that ends up being
Reddit.
Important. Mm-hmm. Because that is usually the voice that is heard, right? And it doesn't always reflect the game as a whole. That I'm very curious, though, to see how he manages the changes to the games. And I don't want to say how he spins things, but how he frames things, because You got to frame it in the right way. And if you do that, then you alleviate a lot of trouble down the road. A lot of stuff is in framing. So I'm really curious to see how he frames. And we'll get our first look at that probably when the anime Dead and Fractured Staff changes drop.
Yeah, yeah. He also said he was brought in to be more visible, more present, and help the J-Mods have more discussions with the community in general on this. And in particular, one of the things that was mentioned was actually doing more live streams, because I was remarking to somebody, I forget who it was, that, you know, the amount of RS3 live streams we have by CM versus the amount of OS live streams are, you know, truly stark and staggering. And it'd be nice to get back to that. So if he's able to deliver on that, that will be wonderful. Taxi, opening opinion?
I mean, I had a thought on this. The biggest thing for me is kind of like you're saying, in terms of, I think, how it's going to line up with whatever everyone else is doing, if that makes any sense, right? So we've got, like, the new manager for the game. We've got new, like, leadership for how things are being produced, who very clearly does want to go back to putting out more behind the scenes and more roadmaps, right? We've seen a lot more of those over the last year. And I'm curious if Doom is going to be a new tool for kind of having that outreach, having those, you know, trying to do more of those releases, right? Like we were talking about it with the stuff this week for the Quest release next week, that I'm not a huge fan of it being released as a, like, you know, if people aren't going to read it in the Quest, they're not going to read it on a news post. That's for dang sure. I think having things that are like fun live streams, I think a live stream would get more people interested and engaged in a lot of that stuff. And I'm sure it was in, you know, they did show that, but even so,
yeah.
Like, I think having more engaging live streams on upcoming content, if they're going to either tease or announce or whatever it is, right? If they're going to give us warning for content, whatever that looks like. I think having those more live streams about it can only be for the good, and I hope that he keeps that up. Time will tell.
Yeah, right. I think that's a good summary. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to say I really agree with that, because if you look at some of the more successful people in CM, they were very active, right? They were active. They had a lot of live streams. You know,
Lee.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes. Those were the two names that I was going to bring up. And even Porky would get out there some, right? Like, we just haven't seen that same kind of level of that. But I think what it does is it gives people a chance to, you know, to kind of participate, to be heard a little bit. But also having that J-Mod there to continue to frame the argument, to frame the discussion, to show people why it's fun. This is how you do it, though. Check this out.
Give it the actual, not spin is a bad connotation to it, but effectively to give it the spin to say, hey, here's like the things people are talking about with this, but also there's this, and this is cool.
Yeah, yeah, right. And, well, to show and people why, right? Like,
be that hype machine. Be willing to be that voice that does
and,
those things.
And there's going to be people in the community here who are going to say, you know, if he's going to be playing the game, shouldn't he have more knowledge and whatnot? But I think, I don't think you need that to be a successful CM. What I do think you need is you need that ability to be one with the community and be on the same wavelength as them. And if he's playing the game and just picked it up, we all know from Fresh Start Worlds how fun the beginning and mid-game is. And if he can share that with the wider community and build relationships with that and use that as an additional skill set on top of the communication styles that we've seen this week in the Reddit post and the live stream, and you pair all those together with the right framing, like you said, Tanis, this could be the start of something very good.
Yes,
I agree. Right, to be fully clear, there are a lot of people at Jagex who know the game so innately to such an incredibly deep level that is so incredibly not his job.
Exactly.
Like, it certainly wouldn't hurt. I'm not going to say he shouldn't know anything about the game. But if his job is to be a voice for the players, as he's saying, right, to just if he can just be a good conduit passing things that we're saying to the people who know what they're doing and are doing the design work, 10 out of 10 good work, right? Even if you never pick up the game. I would love to hear you picking up the game and enjoying it, but that is less important to me than doing the job well like that.
Yeah, like, yeah, for example, from another game, Star Trek Online. The Star Trek Online CM. He plays the game at what the core of the player base level plays the game at, but in terms of relaying the concerns that a lot of the people have in the high-end meta DPS chasing scene, he is 100% able to relay those concerns and get those people on the stream who need to talk about those sorts of things.
Yep.
Yeah. And I look at this as kind of like, okay, don't lose sight that CM means manager at the end of the day, right? So think about in your own life at work. Your manager doesn't have to be the best at the particular job you do. You want them to be the best at managing the team and the people.
If they're supporting you, they're doing their job. Their goal is to support you and to support the success of the organization. And if Doom is able to keep, like, if that's his goal, if that's what he wants to do, and if he does it well, kudos. Please. So happy to have you.
And that's what we need at this point, if I'm being 100% honest. Because there was an admission in the live stream that when Maude Warden came in, one of the initial directives that he brought in was that he effectively brought in directives that said, don't over-discuss, don't put out promises that are missed. And as a result, that was addressed by shutting down communication, which he actually addressed on the episodes we had him on. And with this, Hooley said that, you know, we never got back to actually having these discussions and being open and visible. And that's what this is about.
Right. Well, this is a chance to walk and chew gum at the same time. Right. You can be involved and you can communicate with the community without oversharing and overpromising. So that's what I'm hoping for.
I mean, it's all about the internal expectations. We've made memes for years. Let's not sugarcoat this about, oh, they promised it in September. We'll see it in January.
Yeah.
Like, let's not be... There is a reason
the
they
summer
shut down
2017 meme.
We shouldn't totally do this. However, lately they've been very good. Since even, like, the release of Archaeology, where they said, hey, pandemic, give us an extra 1 month. We're like, yo, 1 month. We'll see it in September. And then it was there a month later. Yeah. Like, they've been good about stuff pretty much since then, at least. And so, if they're keeping that up and they're willing to tell us about it in advance, they're getting back comfortable with that, yes.
And then if you think otherwise, I'll just say to anybody else out there, question the lens at which you are viewing the community, because that also goes into framing that your perspective on this is effectively creating two subjective different experiences about what's happening in the RS community. That's not to say either of them are wrong. It's just about perception and how people see it. And, you know, the conclusion of this was is that the early things, the emphasis was on early things, more streams, more discussions, and more visibility, and more collaborating with content creators. We'll have to see where that one goes, but that's an entirely different topic in itself. So, overall, I think we're in a good place with Mod Doom, and we'll just have to watch what happens next. I guess that's where we leave this, unless you guys have anything else.
Nope.
Cautious optimism. Let's go.
All right. Sounds good. And with that, we're going to move on to our achievements of the week. We do have a few of them. This week, and we got first up Robbie with 200 million fire making XP on the 15th, Cyoasis with 120 mining on the 14th, and Waffens with 99 archaeology on the 14th.
We then had Jade Gizmo with 120 Slayer on March 12th, and then Fire Effort with 120 Cooking and 120 Hunter on March 11th. Good work.
Nice. Then we have Heathcliff with 120 woodcutting on the 11th. And we have Worst Tasker with 99 construction on the 10th. And then we have God Shaman with 99 divination on March 9th.
Right. Ooh, on, everybody.
Good job,
well
guys.
Well done. Well done. All right. We're going to move into Pick of the Week, and we're exercising our new form of pick of the week, where one of them can be tech news, one of them can be something else. But we're going to start with Daxi's pick of the week first, which is one we can have a fun discussion on, the three of us here. So go for it.
Yeah, Shane mentioned this one to me, and this is maybe a little long in coming. I'm not sure, but our pick for this week is The Elder Scrolls Online. Oh no, we're advertising a different video game on the video game podcast. I'm so sorry, fam. But yes, just in terms of something else that has been my break from RuneScape recently, and as soon as Necromancy comes back, every day we'll be back like it never changed. I'm 100% sure. I'm very excited to hear and learn more about it. And Quest Week next week, we'll be around. But the thing that's been taking a lot of my time lately is Elder Scrolls, and I was never a Skyrim player, never did anything like that. But the game kind of drew me in. It has a very good, it's very much more of your classic MMO in terms of things looking like WoW or the things people may have played before, where you've got a skill system and a skill bar, and you select your class and you have skill lines that level very quickly, to be very frank. At least in comparison to what my RuneScape brain is used to.
And very quickly.
Getting a skill line maxed is.
You could probably level a skill line in an evening, most of them.
So most of them, if you have the materials in advance, you could level in 10 minutes. Be very frank. Not to say that the skill lines are not the end game in that game. It's more of your actual skill. And the combat is a much larger part of the game. There isn't really skilling necessarily. There is a lot of design, like housing and fashion, of course, is end game, naturally. And designing your building your homes, those kinds of things. But there's also a very heavy end game in terms of combat stuff and very high. There's a very big skill level in that, which is lovely. But also, the game itself is composed, like the base form of what the game is or is supposed to be, is built around questing. Everything in the game, every piece of dialogue, every single one, is voice acted. All of it. Everything that is said by any person is voice acted.
And that's where Tannis comes in.
And they recently, just literally this week, they added in the option to have every menu item, everything in your inventory, every word in the game can be read aloud to you by voice in-game. It's built into the systems. Everything is voice acted. Or at least has some way to have it accessible by audio, which is just super cool to me, right? I mean, you still need to be able to like see and navigate around the game world, use a map. It is obviously visually fantastic, but it is, there are, you know, literally hundreds of main quest line quests and things in it. Is some of them are a little more fetch questy and things. There are a lot of, you know, go kill the thing, go collect the thing, but it is stories of different places and people. Mm-hmm. And the way that the world comes alive through the voice acting and through, honestly, the rather nice visuals, as far as I'm concerned, mm-hmm. They do a good job with it to build a good engaging story. And the story has kept me there. To be totally honest, because of who I am as a person, the character creator drew me there because I like a lot of sliders. It makes me very happy. And the storylines and the way that the game is set up kept me so far. And they've done a lot of work recently to be very accessible so that you can complete pretty much everything at a very base level without... the game meets you where you are in a very nice way.
Yeah, and you know, I initially had tried this about 4 years ago as such, and it didn't stick. But my introduction to the game was you, in particular, when I wanted to play a support after doing lots of RuneScape PVM. I was like, oh, I want to play a support in PVM. Mm-hmm. I can't really do that in RS. Where am I going to go? And lo and behold, I can play my healer in ESO. That is since ballooned to a number of characters as such, and you know it's a fun game from an MMO perspective, and it's something that I definitely keep around on the side in addition to everything else. So I enjoy it for that perspective. But Tannis, you've played it before as well, and
oh,
we need to get
will.
The accessibility angle now from you, especially with this week's update.
I absolutely love ESO. I love it because of all the voiced quest, and you know, I like its combat system to me, it's kind of, you know, that's quintessential how it should be. But with this change this week, I can't even describe how great this is. I've been talking a lot about narrated menus lately, and we're just now starting to see it in more and more games, and it makes my gaming experience so much better. The narrated menus are they're wonderful. It's the last piece of the puzzle that I really needed for this game. You guys can attest there is lots and lots of equipment and lots of menus, lots of information. And that would always take me a long time. I could spend so much time in my menus. You know, in a typical game session, I would spend more time in menus than I would playing. And that can be a little cumbersome sometimes. So, I mean, unless you're doing creating a character or something. But that, I think, is really going to it tops it off. And the other thing I love about ESO is there's so many viable kinds of builds and ways to play.
Everything works. You can wear whatever you want. You want a golden sword to follow you around and hit stuff with you? You can do that.
Yeah. You know what?
Have nice passives at all times? You can wear that too. Don't want to wear sets, just want to vibe. Send it.
Yep. You want to be a wood elf that just summons things and you're like a child of the forest with your woodland friends? Go ahead. You know, I mean, there's so much to
use his bows.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's fair to say you'll probably be having another look at it with the update this week on this. But there's a fairly hefty expansion for it coming in June as well. That's the model that ESO works on, yearly expansions with content drops. Otherwise, what is it, two or three times a year in addition to the yearly one?
You have two new zones with whole questing, but effectively two new maps worth of the game every year, traditionally. Plus, and then in every quarter you have a new thing. So first and third quarters you get two new dungeons. Second and fourth quarters you get two new zone and maps, with the biggest one coming over the summer in the second quarter.
All right. But yeah, ElderScrollsOnline.com. There is a monthly fee behind that if you want the full-blown package experience, but otherwise it's just a one-time game purchase if you want to do that. Before we go, favorite classes. Tanis?
Necromancer.
All right. Thaxi?
Oh, I love my Templars.
All right.
They're doing okay right now.
Nightblade for me.
I spend most of my time on a Dragon Knight tank, I suppose. But Templar is the true love. And new class coming out in this summer, too. First time since Tanis last played. First time in years they're releasing a new class. The 7th class to ESO is coming out this summer with their new update in June. So good time to get in and learn before that drops.
All right, speaking of learning, that takes us to my pick of the week. And this one's a bit of a tech news versus actual pick of the week. Folks might, of course, be familiar with ChatGPT and the OpenAI.com chatbots that have been spurred that we've been seeing since the tail end of 2022. Well, just this past week, they have released GPT-4. And what this one can do is downright astounding from this. It opens up the prompt length that it can take from, I believe it was 8,000 characters before, up to 32,000 now. And it can also read images and whatnot. So you could pass in a sketch drawing, for example. And this was an example that was given. Somebody sketched a wireframe of a website, and ChatGPT was able to spit out some HTML code and style sheets that provided a working prototype of that website. And what they also mention in here, and of course, this is a point where I tell everybody to take everything in relation to ChatGPT with a grain of salt, is they are boasting that now it can pass a simulated bar exam with a score around the top 10% of test takers compared to ChatGPT 3.5, it was in the bottom 10% of exam takers with that. And it's actually quite interesting to just go to the OpenAI website and log into it and start asking it things. It is remarkably aware of context. With providing some appropriate numbers, I was able to get it within a couple of message prompts to tell me how many trees I would need to plant to get from level 30 to 99 farming in RuneScape. And it knew.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it knew. I had to, of course, teach it that I wanted to go from level 30 and not level 1, and there were level requirements. So still some rough stuff around the edges. And that's where we get to the point where it produces things that look like they're authoritative, right? Mm. They look authoritative. But you have to just be careful with this and realize that there could be errors in what it gives you. So it's not something where you can just say, hey, give me this, and lo and behold, it's going to be the be-all and end-all of it. No, there still could be potential errors in it. And, you know, I'm interested to see where this goes, because a lot of people have said that this is a typewriter moment, as in the typewriter changed lots of things. The internet changed lots of things. The smartphone later changed even more things. And some folks believe that GPT is potentially going to be one of those disruptive technologies that will, in effect, change the way that we do things. But at the end of the day, it's a very interesting, I will say, assistant, let me just say, in terms of being able to, you know, say, hey, explain such and such a concept to me in a certain style, and it can do that, for example. It can also do lots of silly things as well, like read out, for example, the weather report with a surfer guy accent. That's something else people have used it for. And the thing I want to highlight with this is that we might be at the precipice of something interesting, but at the same time, I also want to allay any fears in that this is not Skynet. It's not a AI that's going to go rogue and take off and start killing people. It's effectively a learning model that is inherently more complex and more capable than the models used to predict autocorrect in your smartphone keyboard, as an example, on this. You guys have any questions about it or any interesting... Have you guys dabbled in it at all?
No, but I'm definitely going to, because now I feel like maybe I won't have to write so many emails myself. I must have to read them.
That's one thing where people think that it might have a role is, you know, writing messages like that in the future.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, like I said, proverbial pinch of salt, just, you know, make sure what it puts out is actually... correct. And
well, also, just because someone has to say the doom say the thang, you know, with love to my good friend the internet, I do believe the internet as a whole has maybe made us a little less good at communicating with each other in a way that is kind and respectful, and I'm going to say, like, people are just less good at making the good words, right? And maybe that is people are less putting less effort into pleasing one another, and that's how that should be. But I think we should keep a weather eye on what this is doing as a whole. But, like, personally, I prefer to just write a lot of my own stuff, and maybe that will change with time. Maybe I'll look back on this and be like, oh, man, I thought that once, huh? Interesting.
Yeah.
But, currently I've done nothing with it.
Yeah.
And, at any point.
And just to give an example of something else it can do, you can feed it into an image. And I have the image on the website right now and on the video version of the show. The user says, what's funny about this image? Describe it panel by panel. And what it is it's a smartphone connected to a cable that looks like a VGA cable. But of course, any sane person will know that the VGA cable never connects to a smartphone. And then in the other two panels, it's got a picture of the adapter. And then when you flip the adapter on its side, that you see, oh, it's a lightning connector for an iPhone. And the image, and GPT responded, the image shows a package for a lightning cable adapter with three panels. Panel one is a smartphone with a VGA connector, a large blue connector, typically used for computer monitors plugged into its charging port. Panel 2, the package for the lightning cable, adapter with a picture of a VGA connector on it. And panel 3 is a close-up of the VGA connector with a small lightning connector at the end. The humor, and this is the part where it shows its capability, the humor in this image comes from the absurdity of plugging a large outdated VGA connector into a small modern smartphone charging port. And it was able to glean that from just the image.
ChatGPT, stop it. The joke isn't funny after you explain it. Shaking my head.
Another thing it was able to do was recreate the Pong video game from the 70s.
That's cool.
In code.
So it's, I was going to say, so it's a, what grade is that? So it's a high school age coder? That's nice.
But in terms of programming before GPT-4 on the previous one, and this is going to sound very convoluted to everybody out there, I asked it to write, and this was when I was dabbling with it, I asked it to write a function, i.e. a procedure in the C programming language, which is a very obtuse programming language that not that many people should be learning at this point in time, unless you're doing specific operating system or game engine work, to make a web request to a web page on the internet without using a specific library, and it did it. The only thing I had to do was change some of the library paths to make it work on macOS, but it worked as anticipated.
So, in theory, could you feed it a video and have it give you notes about it?
The language model does need some work on transcriptions. It does.
Okay.
But there is already a macOS application that uses a similar model where you can feed audio to it and it generates a transcript. In fact, it's been something I've been looking at for the podcast.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, give it a few years. You'll be at a point where, you know, generating transcriptions for videos is going to be commonplace. And, you know, having it summarize things, I'd imagine, would be something that would happen as well.
Fair enough.
So, interesting things on the horizon for it. But links to both these picks can be found at update.show. Before we go on to what we've been up to, just a note that we are still running our Help Wanted form. If you have any interest in appearing on the podcast, or you think you have any skills that might be useful to our production, visit update.show/help, fill out the form, tell us what kind of RuneScape player you are, and give us a place to contact you. Thanks to the couple of people who have already filled that out, I'll be in contact with you in the next week or so. I just wanted to put a note out there that you have been heard. Update.show/help for that. But what have we been up to on RS? Let's start with you, Tanis.
So I made about 12k refined planks, and I'm turning those into frames right now. And yeah, just going to be doing that for the foreseeable future, for a while, so that I can AFK construction.
Wow.
That's what I'm doing.
Is that how do you feel about the path you're taking on that?
It's slow, but it's the path that I kind of want to take because I don't.
Okay.
Because I really enjoy playing. So I don't play as much at the desktop anymore. And this is a lot more mobile friendly. So I know I'm taking an XP cut, but it's just a lot more comfortable for me. You know, and I used to not have to, you know, I used to not be in an office chair all day,
yeah,
all this stuff, and now I am. So at nighttime, when I do get my game time, sometimes I just want to, you know, chill on the couch or lay in the bed. I don't want to sit in my chair anymore. So that's kind of prompted this.
All right, sounds good. How about you, Thaxi?
So it's my finals week for the next couple of weeks. They spread them out, very nice of them. And there's this great game called ESO that had an update on Monday. So my RuneScape this week has been lacking.
That's but okay.
Looking forward to getting into the fort, to be honest, ahead of probably over the weekend, ahead of the quest update, because I do want to be able to play that on release day. So
that's
the plan.
Well, I do have something to talk about RuneScape related. I recomped this week. I finally completed the last requirement that I had, and I was completing the list of mini quests.
Nice.
One of them was Purple Cat. Would you guys care to guess what the other two were?
I think you told us about them at some point. I'm still disappointed that you never did Purple Cat because that's just a fun logic puzzle.
I know.
I don't know.
They were Wandering Gull.
Sure.
And
good
the,
fix.
And
thank
the,
you.
And the Desert Slayer dungeon.
What do you have
I'm
to do?
I'm still alarmed you never did that one. That's still the best place to do like Aberrant Spectres and a couple other things.
I don't do Slayer.
Oh, I mean, the one in Polyvich.
Yeah, the one down the world where you have to kill all four of the little side bosses at the bottom to unlock the like portal aspects after smoking kills. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that was the last thing. That was the last thing on the comp train after the farming one from November, which was completed a little bit later than I had hoped it would be. But nonetheless, recomped, and we'll have to wait and see if there's anything in addition to the quest that takes that away next week. That's always a fun experience, having your comp cape get whisked away from you a few days after you get it back and such.
It is good to be able to get it back quickly, though, right? Like, quest should be a few hours, you'll enjoy it, and then you can wear your cape again. I mean, you know, don't need a cape for the quest.
Yeah. So, but aside from that, progressing on Yak Track, and what I've been doing is the same thing I did on the last Yak Track, and it's actually going remarkably quick that I am doing the Task A's primarily, and the only Task A's I will skip are Summoning and Dungeoneering.
Wow. Okay.
Why Dungeoneering? Wait, they made Dungeoneering earn a certain amount of XP.
Yeah, it's XP.
Oh, it's not. You can't just do quick force. Okay, yeah, you're in the field.
Yeah. Slayer has been dummies for now. Mm-hmm. Forgive me on that, but I mean, it's acceptable nonetheless. There's a huge stack of them. I'm 120. I don't see the need to save them for any point in the future. But I honestly feel that's like the way to make Yak Track go. Tanis, you've been playing the track. You've been just doing skill and kill.
Just skill and kill. And it's...
How is it feeling? Yeah. I know there was some discussion on that last week about whether it was rough.
It feels slower than it normally has. I used to be able to do a full Yak Track on two characters by the time it's done. And that's not... I don't even know if I'm going to make it through the first one because I'm on task 25.
Out of 70.
And it just feels like I should be further along, right? But
well, it is also a longer track. The extra 20 tasks is interesting in terms of how people are going to, like, does it stop scaling at some point and just, or does it, like, you still
get. It's the same scale as last time. It's obviously more gradual. It's still an average of 3 hours a day if you wanted to do skill and kill, which I mean is quite a bit for just regular AFK skilling. But I also imagine there's a world out there where people play on mobile at work who can, people who are on mobile, you know, for a couple hours
there
a night. That's going to be no problem with skill and kill, right? So
true,
but. Nonetheless, that's what we've been up to, and of course we'll be back next week for Quest Week. We'll have the full Quest Week treatment of that. And if you want to have that episode automatically delivered to you, the best way to do that is to subscribe. And we're on all the podcast listeners out there: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Pocket Cast, Amazon, Stitcher, and of course YouTube at youtube.com/rsbnb. That's where the video versions go, as well as the nibbles. Each and every week. But if you want the podcast delivered automatically to you, best way to do that is to subscribe. But I think that's it for this week. Anybody have anything else?
Not for me.
I think that covers it.
Alrighty, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of Update. And thanks again to the both of you being here. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.
Ciao.